Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
Hey, what's up? This is Jack Inslee, host of Full Service Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this show, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
All right, thank you so much for tuning in to the Heritage Radio Network. We are coming to you, as always, live from the back of Roberta's Pizza here in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It's a lovely day. You have tuned into the Farm Report. I'm your host, Erin Fairbanks, and we are excited to welcome back to the Farm Report Sarah Teal of the Adirondack Grazers. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
It's good to have you back. I feel like since the last time I had you on, I've learned how to actually say Adirondack. It was a real challenge for me last time, and I just want to get some credit for learning the correct pronunciation.
I know. Well done.
So for folks who aren't familiar with the Grazers, you know, you guys started a beef cooperative in upstate New York back in May 2012 with a group of 8 farms. Can you talk a little bit about how you initially got going and give us an update as to where you're at here in 2014?
Things are going very well. We have grown. We now have 32 farm members. And I think we're going to get our first million in sales this year, so that's good. We've grown, and it's been an interesting journey trying to get there, but it looks like it's working out. So that is good. We've picked up new customers and a lot of new farms, and we even have a little office, and we have a staff. So things are going well.
Awesome. And then for folks who maybe aren't so familiar, can you share with us a little bit about, you know, why start this cooperative and kind of what exactly it is that you guys do?
I started the cooperative because we have a farm upstate on the New York-Vermont border. And a lot of the farmers around me were going out of business, including our local farmer who farmed our farm. And I just thought if they would be able to sell their beef, which was fantastic, I knew it was, to New York City, then they could maybe hang on to their farms and not have to go out of business. And a lot of people were dairy, but they'd always kicked a few beef. And I just thought, well, if when they give up the dairy, which is what was happening, but expanded the beef, then they could carry on. So we started a grass-fed beef herd, and I realized you couldn't do it just as one farm. So we started a cooperative with the Cornell Cooperative Extension helping us out. And we started with 8 farmers and then 12, and it's grown. And what it means is that they can keep their independence, and they are part of a farmer-owned group. And we take a very small percentage of every sale, the co-op does, but they're getting the top dollar for their beef. And so we've been making money for farmers, which is the purpose of it, and really is a kind of a farm rescue program. But it is also to get healthy beef into the city, healthy local beef into the city, which when you and I last talked, you know, it's a challenge. It's still a challenge. And the transportation part of it is the last bit that we've got to get right. But we are doing it, which is the exciting thing.
Yeah, it's happening. And we're going to talk a little bit later in the program about the Kickstarter campaign that you guys have going on. But before we get there, I want to talk a little bit about kind of the process of what you're doing. So you're selling food direct to consumers or into retail shops, or who are some of like your main customers?
Well, luckily we sell to you guys. So we send down a whole animal to Emily at the Heritage butcher shop in Essex Street Market every other week. But our main and biggest customer right now is Fresh Direct. So we have been, we started with them in the fall. We started slow and sending a few animals, and we built it up to sending 10 beef every other week, and now we're on 10 a week. And that's been good because they, like you guys, you know, they came out and they toured the farms and they inspected us, and we meet with them constantly, and we've been building a sort of slow program. And so they are at this point the largest customer, but we are also selling to Fleischer's, which is fantastic, and Gramercy Tavern, which we love. And then to a market, one in Albany and one in Saratoga. We find that for us, the wholesale is what we can manage. If it comes to managing small pieces of beef for individual restaurants, we can't handle that. It's too much work. So we send also to a group called Main Street Wholesale in Farmingdale. And restaurants can order from them, and they get to worry about little pieces of beef and not us. We couldn't handle it.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a lot. I think folks often forget how much of it, you know, one, how large a head of beef is, but also how much of that ends up being, you know, ground meat or bones or offal or other parts that you're not usually seeing on the menu in restaurants across, you know, the city and across the country. With regards to the growth in farmers, that's really exciting to see that, you know, you've grown from 8 initial farms to 32. And I wonder if you can tell us a little bit, on average, of what these farms look like. You had mentioned there's a lot of people transitioning out of the dairy industry into the beef industry. I'm just wondering if you can give us a little scope of or profile of your farmers, if they're typical or maybe what's a typical group and maybe some of the atypical folks who are part of the co-op.
Yeah. The nice thing about a co-op, actually, is that we can encompass any size farm because we're a group. So if we're sending 10 a week, we can either send 10 from one farm or 2 from here and 2 from here. You know, so we have a variety of sizes. We have small herds, I guess the smallest are probably around about 40 or 50, because most are cow-calf operations, so they're enclosed herds, and that's good because we know exactly where everything's coming from. But then they go all the way up to, I suppose, the biggest herds are around about 300 or 400. And they vary. Most of them are farmer-owned and operated, which is the point. Some of them have farm managers and are owned by, you know, guys who might be working in the city, but there's just a few of those. But it's helpful to have those because they're often the larger herds, and that means that they can balance things out with the small ones. If we only had small farms, it would be very difficult to keep it all balanced. But we like a sort of range. Mainly what we're looking for is either farmers or farm managers who really understand soil and pasture management and the importance of their grass, and then the health of their animals and the genetics. So, and the breed. We're very concerned that they're using good breeds that are good on grass. So that's what we're looking for, and we don't really mind how big or small they are.
Right. So you've established at some point some kind of basic criteria, so when someone approaches, you can kind of make a decision about whether or not they're going to be a good fit.
Yes. And now the good thing, we've always had very strong protocols, but now we have a young woman called Ashley Bridge who gets in the car and she goes off and visits everybody. And she knows exactly what she's looking for. She really is informed about all of this. She goes to all the conferences, the grass conferences, and she will go and visit the farm and take photographs, and she fills in a questionnaire. And then the board votes on whether to include them as a member, because we're trying very hard to keep the standards high and the consistency strong. So it's been important to have someone go out and visit. Yeah, so that's what we do now. So
I feel like there's no excuse for getting your feet on the ground. I mean, I definitely learned a ton when we were able to come up and visit a couple of the farms with you. Well, it's interesting that you talk about kind of the kind of benefits of having a diversity of farmers with regards to kind of size. I think that's one thing that I find so interesting about, you know, regional farm economies is that we need that diversity. You need kind of a multitude of players to kind of make things work. And you had touched on some of the other components that make your business work or not work. So in addition to the farmers, I'm assuming it's also kind of slaughterhouses and processing facilities and then transportation. So maybe starting with the slaughter facilities, can you talk a little bit about, you know, as you guys have seen such an increase in the number of animals that you're processing, has there been the resource in the slaughter space? And do you continue to, you know, does, if the answer is yes, does it seem like that's going to continue to be a space that's able to grow as you guys grow?
Yeah, no, that's always the question. And we started with Eagle Bridge Custom Meats, and we have now a pretty solid relationship with those guys. You know, we've spent a lot of time working together to work this out. And so we've been able to increase our slots with Eagle Bridge, which is great. And again, slow but sure. And they've increased their space and their freezer space. And so we've been growing as they've been growing. And that's the good thing about doing this is that, you know, you can grow if there's a consistency of market too. And then we're using New York Custom Processing in Bridgewater, which is bigger. And then there are some new ones opening up. So we've started relationships with some, there's a new one in Ticonderoga and different places. And then we're expanding into Vermont, so now we've been working with a slaughterhouse there. So in some senses, that's gotten better because people have known now for a while that the lack of slaughterhouses is a problem, and they've been opening up or expanding current ones. But the big problem is transportation, and that's my current obsession, is that you know, there is no local system in place, so we were relying on regional access, and then they decided they weren't going to pick up at Eagle Bridge anymore, so that left us and the various other people stranded. And luckily, I think you guys know Mark from Fresh Connection, and so Mark jumped in, and he's been fantastic. But it slightly doesn't make sense. There needs to be a bigger, more cohesive local transportation system in place, and that's what we're working on next, is to get a hub going in Hunts Point for local meat, which there isn't right now. And so we're really going to try every angle. We're working with different groups like the New York Economic Development Council and people to put that piece in place, because it is one of the things about local foods everywhere. But there isn't transportation. You know, they're just used to big trucking companies.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the interesting things about the co-op model is that, you know, you have one group with many voices. You know, you guys have some weight behind you in those conversations as you look to legislators and policymakers. And the transportation issue being literally, you know, you need someone to pick the meat up from the slaughter facility and deliver it to the city. I mean, it's not much more complicated than
that. But if you, you know, if you have a big enough truck, you know, it's very hard. There's only one guy driving it. And dropping, you know, at Gramercy Tavern, the poor guy has to carry in these heavy, you know, half a cow. Or he's coming to Emily at Essex Street Market. And you have to park that thing, carry everything in, and you're the only person. Hope that you don't get a ticket in the meantime, and try and find parking. And it's kind of crazy. It would make much more sense if we could all of us get together and create a hub in Hunt Point and have one big truck pick up from all the slaughterhouses, drop everything at a hub in Hunt Point, and then have Mark or someone from Fresh Connect option, pick it up and just do local runs. That would make more sense than what we're all trying to do individually right now.
Yeah, I definitely spent a good year making driving the truck from Flying Pigs Farm down to the city and making.
You know.
So I know I was a study in the inefficiencies of the local system, and I think also the thing that I felt was so striking and like a real lesson to me from my time at the farm is, God damn, you have to be good at so many things. And if, you know, you're trying to focus on, you know, maintaining a great pasture and the genetic integrity of your livestock and caring for your animals and the veterinary needs and, you know, managing, you know, your family and those aspects of that business. And then, you know, coordinating with slaughter facilities and then having a place to sell your final product that makes sense. And then all of a sudden you have to be a delivery person and an expert on the trucking routes. And, you know, gosh, there's still just 24 hours in a day. And it just seems like, it's too much. It's too much. So we are going to take just a quick break. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the film project and the Kickstarter campaign and I'm excited to hear a little bit more about that. So hang tight. You are listening to The Farm Report, and we'll be right back.
In 2001, Heritage Foods USA has sold pasture-raised, antibiotic-free heritage meats to restaurants and homes around the country. Our farmers raise their animals with care using traditional methods guaranteed to produce the very best-tasting meat. Our pork breeds include Berkshire, Red Wattle, Duroc, Gloucester Old Spot, Large Black, and Tamworth, and our beef comes from Piedmontese, Angus Akiyushi, Belgian Blue, Highland, Simmental, and Belted Galloway cattle. We also carry a rotation of 24 rare breeds of heritage chicken, seasonal specialties like lamb, goat, geese, and of course, heritage turkeys. Visit us online at www.heritagefoodsusa.com or give us a call at 718-389-0985 to place your order today.
All right, we are back. You're listening to The Farm Report, and I'm your host, Erin Fairbanks. We are on the line with Sarah Teal of Adirondack Grazers. So one of the other kind of themes of your work, I think some of the inspiration was, you know, looking around and seeing the closing of farms in your area. And, you know, if there's no farms, there's no food. But if there's no kind of way for... if there's no kind of economic imperative, it's hard for farmers to stay in business. And here in New York State, we're kind of in trouble. Can you talk a little bit about the state of farmland that inspired you guys to make this film?
Yeah, no, we started filming with our farmers in the summer of 2012 because we thought it would be my friend Lisa Jackson, who's also she's an Emmy Award-winning documentary filmmaker, and we, so am I, and we thought, oh, it would be fun to do little posts on the web so that people, customers, could see exactly where their farm, their beef was coming from, and you could look up the farm, and there'd be a little portrait of the farmers and their land and their cows. And then we realized that actually, especially the people who first started the Adirondack Grazers were a very fantastic and eccentric lot and very, very different from each other. So we just kept filming. And then we realized that actually this is a small story that tells a much bigger story. And the bigger story is the loss of family farms, and it's a national story. It's an international story, actually. But New York State is losing a farm every 3 days. And it's scary. And we're looking at, you know, it's been a disaster for a while, but it's really getting very bad. And so we thought we would wanted to highlight that, and we wanted to pay attention to that. And documentary is a good way because then you can it becomes about people and emotions, and you see what happens when someone, you know, is looking at losing their land. And you can see how hard it is to have put something like this together. We didn't, everybody was so great. They didn't edit themselves. there's plenty of fights that we filmed, because it's hard doing this. And they had their, some of them had their farms at stake. So we wanted to highlight some much bigger issues than just, a few New York farmers putting a co-op together. And that's what's been happening. And I have never done Twitter before, or Kickstarter, but the Kickstarter has been amazing because we wanted to raise a little bit to finish the film. But with it, we have this fantastic assistant called Amy Gaines, and Amy has been doing, tweeting and, tumbling and Facebooking, and she put the Kickstarter campaign together, and it's been fantastic. The number of people that have tweeted us out there. Michael Anthony started it off at Gramercy Tavern, and now Mario Batali and Mark Bittman did it the other day, which was fantastic. He has 430,000 followers from the New York Times. So I think it's been a way of raising a conversation about the loss of family farms, in New York, but across the country. And for that purpose, it's been fantastic, the people that have been tweeting us.
Yeah, well, kind of putting that storyline out there. Well, in the kind of trailer on the Kickstarter page, you talk a little bit about some numbers. I think correct me if I'm wrong, but 3.1 million acres of farmland in the state that's currently lying fallow, and then that a farm closes in New York State every 3 days. Did I get those right?
Yep. It's 1.3 million acres that is being unused. So whenever people, like the head of Chipotle the other day, was defending the fact he's buying grass-fed beef from Australia because he says there isn't enough around, which is ridiculous because there is, and the capacity to grow is really there. You know, if we just took over those 1.3 million former farm acres, and when a farm is out, I mean, the land turns back to scrub really quickly. In 2 years, it's kind of frightening. It goes back to scrub, and this is beautiful farmland, and it's a tragedy because we are losing these family farms, and it's not going to be good for any of us.
Yeah, when I think as we talked about in the first half of the show, there is a little bit of a domino effect at play here, that all of these farms, each individual farm, is linked to this broader economy that keeps these other businesses in business. You know, the tractor supply store and the feed store and the veterinary practices and slaughterhouses and delivery systems. And so, you know, all of a sudden you're working back on so many different levels. I feel like things spin in a quick and kind of scary way. So one of the things that you outlined in the trailer for the film is that you're hoping that this film will be a tool for some advocacy work. And I'm wondering if you can kind of talk about, you know, if you have your Sarah Teal and Lisa Jackson magic wand, who do you want to see this film and what do you hope they're going to take away from it?
Well, I mean, I just had a conversation with a woman from the Natural Resources Defense Council the other day. And they're working on the transportation issue. And she was like, oh, look, you know, will you come and show it to the staff and then we can arrange some screenings, because it will humanize the issue and it will make it much more vital for them. So, you know, I would love to show it to groups like that. We are hopefully arranging a big transport summit with Representative Charles Gibson, who's the Republican congressman, but then also, you know, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand people tweeted us out. So we want to get everyone together somehow, the politicians, the groups, you know, groups like you and Heritage, who understand all these issues, Fresh Direct, a big part of this, to have a conversation about the capacity to grow, the capacity to bring money to upstate New York to directly to farmers. We hope to double the size of the Adirondack grazers next year. And that's, you know, that would be $2 million into the economy in upstate New York, which is fantastic. And we need people to help and to understand that we need support and we need transportation issues sorted out for us and we need a hub at Hunts Point. And I just want to go around and hold screenings. Maybe we can do one at Roberta's. And just have everybody talk about it and understand that this is a problem and we are going to lose these farms and then the farm communities, as you said, if we don't do something. And I think this is one way to do something. I think co-ops work quite well, actually, if you can get them together. And, you know, we'd like to be a model for other people if they want to do it. We can hand on the – we're writing a how-to – we can hand on the information. But I just want to hold screenings all over the place. And we're having a screening at NOFA in January. That's an ideal. And, you know, Lisa and I will be there and some of the farmers will be there and we can just talk. Talk about, you know, together about how to solve this, how to keep families on farms. You know, my big worry is you know, some of the Wall Street people who are coming up and buying up farms. And that's, you know, and then put farm managers in place, and that's fine. But the ideal is to keep families on farm and owning them.
And I think, you know, what you're talking about here isn't a grand charity project, Save the Farms by donating. You're talking about really looking at building, doing some regional economic development, building infrastructure, building businesses. And as someone who grew up in quite a rural area, you know, one of the frustrating aspects for myself, and I think many people from my community, was that it was a community that was dying. There wasn't opportunities for work if you wanted to stay. And I think that is like another factor that's bumping up all across rural America is employment. There's a huge need to be driving employment. And if you look at the ag sector, money spent in ag stays in the state. In the state, it has a really interesting multiplier effect. And I really want to hammer that point here because I feel like often when we talk about, you know, helping farms and saving farms.
I'm so glad you bring that up. This is not a charity case, and the film is not, you know, some useless advocacy thing. It is because we are building a business and we are bringing money into rural New York, and we are employing people, and then the farms in turn are growing and employing people. So no, this is a business. And the film is just a way, really, to, you know, do a shout-out about the problem. But we do have the solution, or one of them. But so thank you for, this is a practical thing, not some kind of charity thing.
Yeah, and
the Grazers is farmer-owned. You know, it's not owned by me. It's not owned by anyone. It's owned by a group of people, a group of farmers. So It's definitely not charity.
Well,
it's to get them a decent price for what they do.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you guys are proving that your model has some legs, and so I'm excited to and hopeful for its future. And we have just another couple of minutes here, so I want to talk a little bit about the campaign, how people can give, and what they're giving to. You've been doing the filming. You know, I think you're looking to raise $15,000, not a ton of money. So can you share with us kind of what that money is going to be going towards, and then what's the best way for people to support the campaign?
I think if you just go on Kickstarter and you look up Grazers Doc, and that's our Twitter handle, at Grazers Doc, you can find the link. We have been raising $15,000 to finish the film and to do outreach, which is what we're doing, and to hold screenings. And we've raised, I think we're at, we're close to $11,000 right now. And it ends on Monday evening, so we're on a big push to get that last 3,500, 4,000 in there. And then we can send you, there are rewards, and we just increased the rewards for getting beef because that was the most popular one. Gramercy Tavern, Michael Anthony very sweetly threw in lunch at Gramercy Tavern and a tour of the kitchen with him and a copy of his cookbook. There's cooking lessons with Lisa Jackson's sister, who's she was on the Food Network and is a fantastic chef. There are different rewards, and there are, of course, the ubiquitous Adirondack Grazers baseball hats and the T-shirts and the muffle shirts. But the beef seems to be the most popular, and we've been sending out lots of boxes of beef. It's just to help finish the film and get it out there and get the screenings going. That's the next step.
Excellent. Well, Sarah, thank you so much for taking some time out to join us on the show today, and congratulations on the success of the co-op so far. And I'm really excited to see what the next year or two is going to bring.
Well, thank you. And really, you know, Heritage, you guys were one of our first customers and our earliest and best, and you've been consistent and fantastic, and we really appreciate it.
Oh, well, that's great to hear. That's Heritage Foods USA, founder of the radio network. Well, if you're out there and you want to learn a little bit more about the work that Sarah and the team is doing at the Adirondack Grazers, definitely check out the website, www.adkgrazers.com. There you can find a lot of info, a little sneak preview of the film, a link to the Kickstarter campaign, profiles of farmers, lots of great information there. So definitely check that out. And you can probably also find out where you can get your hands on some of that delicious beef. Thanks so much. Thanks so much again, Sarah. And thanks everyone for tuning in. Thank you. This show, like all 35 of our weekly programs, is available for free. You can find us on iTunes, on Stitcher Smart Radio, but we hope you'll check out our website. Got a lot of great news content that's updating there every day. You also, if you believe in our work, please consider clicking that donate tab. Become a member. We are a member-supported organization. Thanks so much for listening, and stay tuned in.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.